start of a new week. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi. And joining me in studio this evening are Joseph Boucher from JM Boucher Investments and Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. If you'd like to send questions to us, please do. You can SMS the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Nick, Joseph, nice to see you both this evening. Nick, if I may start with you. Very skinny volumes on the JSE today. And so, I mean, we closed slightly weaker. It was a very sort of sad performance all round. And I guess the JSE's SEN statement that it came out flagging a drop in earnings was hardly a surprise.
Yeah, good evening. It's spot on. I mean, can we not... if anyone who's been sitting in front of a trading screen, as we said off air, in the last couple of months knows exactly why the JSE's shares have been so depressed and have sold off so aggressively, and today another 10% down. Value traded $14 billion today at tops. And that used to be December Christmas volumes. And here we are sitting in June, straight after an earnings season, in the middle of the year, coming up to effectively the end of the second quarter. And value trade of $14 billion. I mean, that pretty much says it all. You know, foreign money leaving, very slim volumes, possibly a little bit of competition from the exchanges. But I think generally just a very subdued investment base across the board.
Yeah. I mean, and Joseph, you can see it in the results that are coming out. You had Invicta, we had Arnold Goldson just in the studio now talking about the company's results, which they said were commendable given how tough it is. You know, but notwithstanding, Invicta's had to cancel the dividend, partly because it had this big tax bill that it owed to SARS, which it paid, and, you know, just being sensible with its capital. But I guess when you have things like Invicta out with results that are weak, is there any reason to buy SA Inc. shares?
Well, it's really just an indication of a struggling economy. Who would think really the JSE would be down or expecting headline earnings to be down 25-35%? And that's really massive. That really shows an indication of how tough the market is, both from industrial to retailers, and certainly I think the JSE as a financial stock. You would think that because it's not just an asset manager, they get lots of fees from transactional fees, data, vending, and so on. But I think it's just an indication of a very, very tough economy. And you've also seen with the JSE that, you know, it's just waiting for a little bit of bad news to happen. If you really look in terms of what's happening on a day-to-day trade basis. Today, I think the JSE early in the morning was down about 60 basis points and so clawed back some of the losses to just end up, down still, but far much better. It shows that investors are very nervous, and I think the direction is not clear yet.
Yeah. Just in light of this, you had NASPAS coming out with results on Friday, and NASPAS, of course, is going ahead with the listing of Prosus, which was a formerly NewCo. In other words, the internet assets, including Tencent, which will be listed on Euronext. And they've had to delay that because there was a snafu with the circulars that went out. Some people had the incorrect address. And the reason they've delayed it is because they were supposed to have a general meeting for people to vote on this, but they couldn't get it all together in time, so now it's been postponed. This is a very long-winded way of saying once Prosus is up and trading on Amsterdam on Euronext, is that going to have a further impact on JSE volumes, do you think, Nick?
Definitely. I mean, 20% it's the largest company listed by capitalization on the JSE by some margin, and accounts, all the index trackers, of course, have to buy it, all the ETFs that hold, who literally hold or hug, or index huggers, as we call them, they all have to either sell or buy it accordingly to if it goes up or down. I do think long-term, though, it is a better solution to realize value for NASPAS shareholders to try and close that sort of discount that it currently trades to 10 cents. But in the basics of it, yes, the money is going to flow more and more towards Amsterdam with this listing and less on the JSE, which is going to exacerbate the problem.
So basically, is there any reason to own the JSE stock, the JSE Limited, at this point?
I think for foreign investors, certainly they're going to go and buy in Europe. I think you could compare almost this with some of the dual listed stocks between South Africa and Namibia because of liquidity. Nobody's going to buy Sanlam from Namibia, or any other stock. They'll buy them from the JSE. But also in terms of the volatility on the rand, you know, people want certainty in terms of what's going to happen at the exchange rate. So most people certainly will migrate. Some of us will stay here, your overseas investors certainly will have it access there because then you've got hard currency and then you reduce your current risk.
Yeah. Yeah, not that positive. If we get to questions, and you mentioned we're in the middle of results season, so a lot of companies coming out with earnings. Omnia is coming out with earnings tomorrow, I think it is. There's just a one-word question, Omnia.
Exclamation mark, question mark.
No, Omnia. Question mark. Maybe there should be an exclamation mark as well.
Sure, we're chatting about it in the office this morning. It's quite a difficult one because we all know it's no secret they need to raise a substantial amount of cash, anywhere north of $2 billion to cover their debt hole and that horror graph behind you. A while ago it was muted, raising a rights issue of around about 43, slowly ticking down, now 34. This rights issue is literally going to have to be closer to the 32, probably 31 Rand. Significant dilution for existing shareholders.
And of course the problem was when they said, because they had kind of strung the market along, indicated that they wouldn't need a rights offer, then they did this U-turn. But then they didn't say exactly why, and they didn't say where they would price it.
I couldn't agree with you more. Classic case of a lot of the South African listed space recently with how to do the investor relations has been nothing short of a marketing disaster, quite frankly. And this was another one. I mean, literally, are they going to do righteous? Aren't they going to do right? Yes, we are. We're not. As you said, it's just been, I think, probably add 10, 15% of the setup recently is just people just saying, we're tired of management, I don't believe what you're saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit of a marketing investor relations disaster, quite frankly. But yes, tomorrow either exclamation mark or question mark.
Yeah. So don't do anything or don't make any calls on Omnia until you know what the call is to make. And we'll know that hopefully tomorrow.
Investors are getting tired of rights issue as a way of raising capital because most of the guys have done that. I think their share prices have remained flat or they've taken a pain. So for Omnia, it's quite sad in the sense that, you know, they're quite dominant in the chemicals and fertilizer industry in SADC. One of the key issues, I think, in terms of them, the impairing in Zimbabwe because they've got a new currency and also there's a bit of loss. But you thought they would have picked up a little bit given the mining sector that seems to be a little bit buoyant. But somehow, I think it's a massive surprise. I'm not quite sure whether, you know, the kind of following Tonga and ESCI, some of these stocks that really battled and that it's even property as assets.
Okay, so that's the case of Omnia. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Astral Foods came out. I think they were just talking today about government's inability to provide basic services.
This is just supposed to be a cheery program.
I'm sorry. So. Okay, we'll have to think about something to cheer ourselves up. But the question is, please talk about Astral Foods' issues with the municipality. The CEO says they had to divert capex to water issues. Is this an isolated issue or do companies which have issues at ground level? This question is a little bit sort of confused. When they have to do this stuff, is it going to affect earnings, basically? When you've had to divert capex that otherwise would have gone into business to supplying your own water?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And good luck trying to claim the money back from the municipality because that ain't going to happen in a hurry. But it certainly speaks of a wider problem, I think, with as far as we can tell, reasonably dysfunctional municipalities. It's certainly affecting public listed companies. So I think we could talk for ages about this, but I think it's definitely going to affect the bottom line, and they can't produce. They said they have to divert, 75 million or 70, something like that, 70-odd million rand towards it. So, it's not a great story, but I think more widespread of a bigger problem amongst these municipalities providing basic service.
Yeah. I mean, Joseph, the one thing that you said was companies still have to go, shareholders are getting tired of companies going to them for rights issues. But that's one of the reasons you're a shareholder. You're there during good times and bad. So sometimes you actually, if you're a shareholder in the company, you're a part owner of the company. You are called on to invest capital in the business. And is now not the time to be investing that capital? So when there's blood on the streets as there is now, is this not the time to buy, or is the situation so dysfunctional in the environment that nothing these companies do can actually account or maybe mitigate the kind of economic environment in which they find themselves?
It's really when, you know, shareholders say, when am I going to get my return? So your total return is your dividend yield, but your and capital growth they want. So certainly, I think, there's a little bit of history there, where where companies are, or CEOs are failing to do the turnaround and implement the strategy to be able to deliver for the shareholders. So you're right, you know, shareholders are there to, you know, bad times and good times and to be able to take the risk. But remember, they're not, you know, responsible, you know, for the running of the company. This is the agent's problem. So directors or management is an agent for shareholders. And the agent problem, really, you don't know whether the person who is representing is going to implement and do what they say, or whether they won't come back tomorrow again. I think I've got a couple of examples. Look at PPC. Wouldn't you be crying if you were Ketsu Gordon, who had invested 40 million in PPC and then you had to leave at 40 rand? The share price is 5 rand or 462.
I think okay. Also, just adding to what Joseph was saying, I think companies like Omnia, like the PPCs, like we've seen recently the Tongaats of the world, we're almost in a situation where companies that are carrying excessive debt seem to be really being targeted at the moment, and they're getting punished accordingly. They are, whether it's investors or, and I don't think it's a local thing, it's a worldwide thing. Anyone who's got excessive debt, people are staying well away from those stocks. Are just getting punished more than most.
Yeah. Okay, there is one. There are a couple of bright spots on the exchange, but I'm betting that none of us are invested in them because it's gold. And we poo-poo gold all the time, and as a result, we've lost out. But the question is, please ask the panel their view on adding some gold to a portfolio. It's broken an important resistance level, but also has fundamental underpinnings. Numerous big names are bullish. John Paulson has 11.25% exposure to the SPDR Gold ETF. Jeff Gundlach, David Einhorn, and Paul Tudor Jones. If the panel is bullish, would they play it through a gold miners ETF or just the SPDR gold ETF? Perhaps we need to explain what that is to viewers.
Okay,
Nick, if I may start with you.
Okay, so as a South African investor, there's a number of ways you can play gold, either through the buying the gold shares, but then of course you inherit all the problems with the gold mining companies. You can buy, which is a very successful ETF we have, it's been around, one of the first ETFs in South Africa, which is the New Gold, which is the Rand Gold Price, which I think is a lovely product. It's coming from a stockbroker. And the gold spot ETF is obviously dollar denominated, which is the biggest gold ETF, which is traded in the US. Okay. My personal view, we don't have massive exposure as a company to gold, but my own personal view, I think there's definitely a place in a portfolio to it. I mean, I think with $2 trillion of negative yielding bonds, with central banks, with Draghi last week, with our uber dovish Jay Powell, with Trump, etc., there's definitely a place for an asset like gold in a portfolio. I work closely with a gentleman that really likes gold and is exposed to Anglo Gold, and I certainly share his sentiment that right now I think you could easily have an easy conversation why you should own gold in this environment we're in now.
I mean, I think our charts will be coming up with the gold price, and it would be nice to get a 5-year chart just to show where we're at.
I think it is broken into, I mean, about
$1,400. Yeah, it's a $1,400. Yeah. So, Joseph, the thing is, now we're saying, okay, should you have gold in your portfolio? Well, maybe you should have had 2 or 3 weeks ago when everything started running. And Nick has mentioned the gold shares, and yes, you do inherit their problems, but they are leveraged to a run in the gold price and also weaker rand, and you would have had an astronomical return on Anglo Gold or Gold Fields.
Over 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. So now, is it too late, or do you think there is actually a long-term fund reason why you should have maybe a little bit of gold?
Oh, you just said it's incredible. Yes, it is incredible. You could be a little bit late-ish. I think if you look in terms of even Gold Fields, Anglo Gold, you know, there was massive volatility in particular in Anglo Gold over the last year. But certainly, I think over the last 3 weeks or so, massive returns. So you're looking at about 60% year-to-date on the gold stocks. And that's massive in terms of return. Now, how much are you going to get on the upside? So I'll go with Nick that possibly you want to go through ETFs. You don't really want to be exposed if you didn't have into that. So in SA, you had a choice of Harmon Gold, Gold Fuels itself, Anglo Gold as your primary pure kind of gold stocks. But if you don't have any one of them, I think go through ETFs.
Okay, and would you prefer a New Gold or an SPDR Gold ETF? In other words, just the dollar gold price.
So it's if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I'd have said, without a doubt, go for New Gold with a weaker rand. But But as you've seen recently, that the dollar has been significantly weaker, and people are calling for a lot of a weaker dollar. So I would say it's 50-50 on either. If you can afford to put your money offshore, maybe the SPDR one is better.
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us or email us. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the moment. The S&P, look at that. It's so exciting, up all of 0.01%. The Nasdaq ever so slightly down, and the Dow Jones trading about just under 2.2% higher. Across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100 gaining just over a tenth of a percent today, and the CAC 40 and the DAX both slightly weaker. So fairly muted markets. It's still with me in studio, Joseph Boucher and Nick Kunze. We've been talking about gold. So we do think maybe a little bit of exposure is worth it, although maybe we've missed the bus. Then Growthpoint, property companies. Growthpoint's share price ran up to R24.94 in trading early this morning, continuing a trend started at 4 p.m. on Friday, then dropped and collapsed to R24.08 at 4:30 this afternoon. Could the panel please explain? Someone has been very closely watching their Growthpoint stock. Any particular reason? It doesn't sound like a catastrophic intraday move either way.
No, certainly I don't think it is a total disaster. So if you look in terms of the retail, the property stocks, some of them certainly have battled. I don't believe that, you know, there's value in them right now. We see that there's oversupply, I think, of office space, where Growthpoint is, lots of malls and people changing. So there's going to be competition. I believe that, you know, if you want to pick, possibly you can just pick for yield, but I would recommend Hypro instead of Growthpoint. Okay. So the share price has been stuck between 23 and 25 for a very, very long time. So don't worry about it. You know, it might go to about 24.50, but you're not going to get much out of it.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, this is the range for Growthpoint hasn't been particularly exciting. So like, you don't buy this, I don't think. I wouldn't have thought to watch it for its intraday movements.
No, and after having years and years of being the outperforming sector on the JSE, the property shares, as we all know, have gone the other way. And I think it's going to take a while to get confidence back into that sector for now, and certainly with the economy where it is at the moment. Yeah.
There's a question on Imperial asking why it was down 6% today. And is it a buy? And I mean, if you looked at... I don't know if there's a commonality, but Bidvest was down 4%, yeah. And it made me think, SA Inc was down, yeah. The JSE's, you know, Invicta's commentary on the results, the
cap,
JSE's committee,
yep.
Cap, I kind of figured that maybe that sort of negativity engulfed all these counters. Was it simply that, or were there any particular Imperial specific issues?
No, I mean, I saw a note briefly today on Imperial. I just said, like, they're just in a tough position. They've got a lot of the income comes from Germany. You've just had some bad info numbers out today from Germany. German economy is also slowing a little bit. South African economy, we know exactly where that is currently. Hot on the trading heels of Cup last week, also disappointing. That's down about, I mean, what we spoke about a second ago, 25% or something since earnings. So, just the same old story, you know, South African economy really, really struggling, and anything exposed to right now, the market's shunning.
Mm. Okay, so moving on from Imperial, unless you have anything further to add there.
I think Nick is right there. Since the unbundling or splitting off that with the motor, I think they thought they would follow almost the Bidvest model, you know, with Bitcoin, Bidvest, and kind of the share price done well and kind of remained with value. But with Imperial, I think the trading is very tough for them.
Mm. Mm. And then question on shares like Telkom and MultiChoice. They trade on massive PEs. What justifies these prices? So that's the first question. And then there's another question that came through on MultiChoice. Okay, so firstly, are the PEs justified in Telkom and MultiChoice?
I think for Telkom, possibly it's not justified. I think there's just been momentum that has been driving it. Remember, I think my last I said a peak was Telkom. Kind of tried to touch 100 and came back, and so now it's trying to go up again. There's absolutely nothing fundamental driving Telkom, other than the fact that, you know, they showed a little bit of an increase in their headline earnings and so on, but increased a little bit of their mobile users.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a bit more cynical in the fact, just adding on, nothing fundamental driving it. I agree. And in fact, there was a note out last week. I mean, Telkom now, I think, the number one most shorted stock in South Africa, for those who wonder where the short squeeze is coming from.
Okay, so in other words, that's a parabolic increase in
the
share price.
Which is 100% right. I mean, the stock's expensive. It's fundamentally nothing driving. And you want to add into the fact that, yes, there are a lot of people, a lot of hedge funds that are short that share, and it's getting difficult to borrow, which adds to the upward momentum.
Okay, so, short squeeze. Okay, and on multi-choice, the longer question was, with subscribers outside of South Africa exceeding local subscribers for the first time, clearly this is a good investment case for multi-choice in a five-year horizon. Hedging whatever occurs in South Africa, be it good or bad. Over the five-year horizon, I don't buy the idea of competitors eating multi-choice's earnings due to the business models of the new entrants. For example, the requirement of good internet penetration for Netflix. Africa, in this case, is a long way off. We actually discussed multi-choice last week, and one of the fears is that it's fairly priced, especially given the competition posed by the likes of Netflix. But if there is an Africa-specific constant growth being recorded by the company, does that outweigh the Netflix risks?
It's a question of what price. I think, you know, those things are priced in terms of the subscribers. So they've got different pricing kind of packages they've been giving, you know, to be able to increase the volume of users. But there's a massive risk in terms of currency risk as well. So I wouldn't be carried away. I mean, I don't want to use Zimbabwe because anytime I appear, I'm against Zimbabwe. But I think they just brought in the so-called RTGS. So if you've got a couple of subscribers in Zimbabwe, then you can't get your dollars out. Then you've got current risk. The same in Nigeria, the same in a couple of countries in Africa. So we need to understand the growth. Is it purely on their premium or on some of these compact packages they could be pricing? So, and now they're cutting jobs, which means they really just want to maintain the earnings to be able to possibly balance off the expectation that the growth will give them the earnings investors are looking for.
Yeah. So in other words, if you're cutting jobs, you know, you're pulling in your belt. So you want to try and keep your earnings at the same or increased level. Yeah. But it's not coming through from revenue, I guess that would say.
Yeah. I think quite a few sort of teams got this, or research guys got this a little bit wrong in the beginning. I think a lot of people thought that when they first delisted or got spun off, that the Netflixes of the world were going to come along and, as you use your one of the viewers' comments, eat their lunch. But people tend to forget that a lot of Africa, they don't have the bandwidth penetration or the fiber.
Which is what this viewer is saying.
Absolutely right. And for a while yet, that this company still spits out cash. Yes, it's expensive, but it's very cash generative. And I think certainly for the short term, there's nothing's not going to change much about the business model. Long term, a very different story. But for the next couple of years, I think they're still not a bad share.
Okay, but are they not too expensive for you?
They are expensive. Look, we did like it. I'm talking from a Sunlum point of view, but I think we're pretty much saying it's getting near full run 136, 140 thereabouts.
Okay, we did mention CAP, you know, as part of the SA Inc. shares that have been sold off. And the question was, having lost 25% after the results, what would be a new fair value? Do you have any thoughts on fair levels for CAP?
We sold CAP, I think it's just about 9.85 some years ago, 1 year ago.
You sold them?
Yes. I don't believe that they're going to, shoot the lights out or recover anytime soon. So for me, I think I'll just tell the viewer that to stay out of it.
Mm. Any thoughts on a fair value, Nick?
Yeah, we are closer to 7 Rand. We quite like the share, but unfortunately, once again, anything exposed to this negative GDP South African economy like CAP, I mean, they are very much, they're as close as you get to the coalface of SA Inc., unfortunately. Like as I said, we had it much higher than here, but we've been proven wrong so far.
Yeah. And then what about Sasol? Is it at fair value at present, given their cost overruns at the Louisiana plant and the current oil price and rand dollar level? Do you have any one-year price forecasts? Just the caveat that price forecasts are an inexact science. So it's more of a often wishful thinking.
Well, the market is now has now priced the Lake Charles at pretty much zero. It's done. There's no more capex going in, as far as we know. Management have thrown us a curveball before. But when that does come on stream, and I believe it's in the process of coming back on stream, that is going to have significant impact to EPS for the share. It was trading rather heavily today on a stronger oil price and a weaker rand. The stock was down 1.8%. So it still tells you that there's a lot of people who don't like the share at the moment. Mm. But I think conservatively, you've got to think this thing is worth more than 400 if it starts to get that Lake Charles right, closer to 400, 450. But for now, it's once again, high debt. We spoke about earlier. Disappointing management at the moment, and shareholders a little bit upset. It's exactly what's happened to a similar story in other JSE shares. So for now, it's going to be under pressure.
But if they sort out their debt, and if management doesn't accept vast salary packages this year, I mean, Joseph, in an ideal world, you know, or given the present circumstances Sasol finds itself in, would you have a price target for the company?
Well, certainly, I think, you know what, the share price, when it fell from 480 to 365, is like almost like a cliff. It's just like one big drop. So I think management needs to be able to come up and say something new. You have two joint CEOs that need to be able to explain how they're going to manage and avoid overruns. And I think both of them have got experience from a financial perspective. Bongani is a CA. So my view is that I think, you know, it has to depend on what the oil price is going to do in the rand.
Yeah, okay. Very quickly, stock picks. While Joseph thinks on his, Nick, you're choosing Richemont this evening.
Yeah, look, it's been trading near the upper end of the range. I've got a couple of reasons for Richemont. Firstly, that there was actually a research note out last week on Forbes saying that by 2020, that the number of billionaires in China has risen ninefold. A lot of high net worth people coming out of the Chinese space. And also, we've seen what has been supposedly a little bit of shun towards America. So away from Tiffany. Tiffany's earnings in China down 20%. And the rhetoric is that they're buying closer to Switzerland and the likes of Cartier and our...
A less offensive luxury goods purveyer.
Yes, so that's why we like it.
Okay. And Joseph, sorry, Anglo-American was actually
Anglo-American. I think there's a little bit of positivity that is coming through, and Pete, this is momentum, I think, for some of the resource stocks. In addition to that, you know, they had their diamond sales, going up, in De Beers, and certainly their tailings as well, storage facilities also shown an increase. So I think there might be a little bit of an upward momentum in there. The share price had gone to about 450, came down a little bit to about 300, now it's 397. So I think on a short-term momentum, you might be able to get 15-10% up on Anglo-American.
Okay, great. Joseph, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Joseph Boucher is from J.M. Boucher Investments. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Stock picks. While Joseph thinks on his, Nick, you're choosing Richemont this evening.
Yeah, look, it's been trading near the upper end of the range. I've got a couple of reasons for Richemont. Firstly, that there was actually a research note out last week on Forbes saying that by 2020, that the number of billionaires in China has risen ninefold. A lot of high net worth people coming out of the Chinese space. And also, we've seen what has been supposedly a little bit of shun towards America. So away from Tiffany, Tiffany's earnings in China down 20%. And the rhetoric is that they're buying closer to Switzerland and the likes of Cartier and our...
A less offensive luxury goods purveyor.
Yes, so that's why we like it.
Okay. And Joseph, sorry, Anglo-American was actually
Anglo-American. I think there's a little bit of positivity that is coming through, and Pete, this is momentum, I think, for some of the resource stocks. In addition to that, you know, they had their diamond sales, going up, in De Beers, and certainly their tailings as well, storage facilities also shown an increase. So I think there might be a little bit of an upward momentum in there. The share price had gone to about 450, came down a little bit to about 300, now it's 397. So I think on a short-term momentum, you might be able to get 15-10% up on Anglo-American.
Okay, great. Joseph, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Joseph Boucher is from J.M. Boucher Investments. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Podcast.